The brutal truth is 28,000 people skipped the presidential race. The brutal truth is Republican congressmen got 28,000 more votes than President Trump. The brutal truth is that's why he came up short. But once you know the brutal truth, then you can kind of grow from that and move forward from that.
That's Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, reflecting on Donald Trump's loss in the state in 2020 and his refusal to accept it.
If you don't face the brutal truth, it's always going to hold you back.
I'm Margaret Hoover. This is the Firing Line Podcast.
Your Secretary of State, Raffensperger. I'm telling you, I think there's something wrong with him.
Georgia's elections have been at the center of the nation's debates about election integrity, with claims of voter suppression in 2018.
Despite the final tally and the inauguration and the situation we find ourselves in, I do have one very affirmative statement to make. We won.
And voter fraud in 2020.
I won this election by hundreds of thousands of votes. There's no way I lost Georgia. There's no way.
Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger says both parties bear responsibility for undermining the public's faith in elections.
It really tears apart social fabric because people don't trust it, so they have lack of confidence.
After standing up to Trump and certifying Joe Biden's victory in 2020, the former structural engineer has continued working to fortify Georgia's elections.
We actually think we really helped all Georgians. It doesn't matter what political party you're in, it just helps people.
But is he ready for 2024?
I know we'll have a fair, honest, and accurate election, and that there'll be a winner and there'll be a loser. And I hope that the winner, when they win with grace. Likewise, the loser does the same.
Secretary Brad Raffensperger, welcome to Firing Line.
Thank you.
Many people may know you, first and foremost, as the Georgia state official who on January 2nd, 2021, was asked by Donald Trump to, quote, find 11,780 votes in order to help him overturn the 2020 election, which you refused to do. Viewers may not know that before you were in politics, you were a structural engineer, built your own company, and you have written that, as an engineer, I think about the machinery of elections. I think about the process. How has your engineering background prepared you to run elections in one of the country's most contested states?
Well, it's interesting. The mechanization, the operation of elections is really something that is well-suited for someone that is very methodical. And so for engineers, we're very methodical about the process. And what is that? How does that work through? And if you really look at what happens, we have 159 counties, but our top election directors, if they weren't engineers, then they're probably, you know, somewhere in the financial field or something where it's really detail oriented. And they just make great election directors because it's really, what is the process? So you follow the process and just be very methodical through the whole thing. After all, you don't want it to look like Lucy in the chocolate factory and just kind of stuffing things for here and there. It's a methodical process.
That call with former President Trump, you've written how it turned your life upside down in some ways. You and your aides spent days, weeks, refuting the various conspiracy theories about voter fraud. And at other points in your tenure as Secretary of State, you've also faced accusations from the left of voter suppression. How widespread are these two hot button issues, both voter fraud and voter suppression, in today's debate about voting?
I think there's segments on both sides, you know, of the aisle. Because when we took office, I was running, so we get rid of the machines that we had, the DRE electronic voting, and get new verifiable paper ballot, which we had done by 2020. But then we also had about 9 or 10 lawsuits from the losing candidate for governor, Stacey Abrams. She lost by 55,000 votes, and she then talked about voter suppression. Meanwhile, in the 2018 cycle, we had 4 million people vote for that gubernatorial race, which was record turnout. Then 2020, it was the flip side. We also had 5 million people in 2020, another record turnout, but then it was voter fraud. But they're really the same coin. It's about really stolen election claims, but one is voter suppression and the other one is voter fraud. Another one are supported by the facts.
Is the real epidemic a lack of confidence and integrity in our elections?
Well, I think the real issue is that when people lose their race, I think they just really need to accept the loss and then come back 4 years later if they want to run again. Because I think it would probably work out a whole lot better for them. Because when Stacey Abrams ran the last time in 2022, she lost by over 350,000 votes. It wasn't close at all.
Well, in both cases, and you write about this in your book, both candidates, both Stacey Abrams and President Trump, former President Trump, spent a lot of time berating and undermining the process and the system. And I wonder if you would care to comment about what the rhetoric about voter fraud and voter suppression does to the public's confidence in the integrity of the election system.
Well, I think it does two key things. One is it really tears apart the social fabric because people don't trust it, so they have a lack of confidence. Now, as it relates to Stacey Abrams' charge of voter suppression, well, then what that actually does, it's a very, good psychology, perhaps, because they said, well, I'm going to show you. I am going to turn out the vote. You can't suppress my vote. But in the case on the other side, when they say there's voter fraud, people then just kind of throw their shoulders down. Well, then why come out and vote? And you actually depress your turnout. It's counterintuitive and it's counterproductive. And so, but neither one of them are helpful for society. Because the fact of the matter is, the truth is over 95% of all the ballots in America now will be with a paper ballot system. So you can audit any race. You can do 100% hand recount of any single race you have. And in Georgia, we just continue to push back after the 2018 race and then after the 2020 race. And we said, here are the facts. And we can go through all the allegations that were made. And we point by point, we have the numbers.
And we'll also go through the key improvements that you've made here in Georgia in order to strengthen, I think, the election process. But I want to ask you about election deniers. I mean, there are people who flat out deny the election was won by Joe Biden. But there are others who say, well, you know, Joe Biden's the president. But, and so I sort of put them in this bucket of election questioners. Many people still in Georgia and beyond question, or there's sort of a sense of disbelief about the notion that Joe Biden could have won. 12 million more votes he won than Barack Obama in 2008. How do you tackle just explaining this to somebody? When you first encounter them, you say, yeah, but how could Joe Biden have won 12 million more votes than Barack Obama in 2008? How do you answer that?
Well, number one, is so many more people were voting with absentee voting, voting by mail, and most people were at home. So, there's just more opportunities. They weren't distracted with other things. And then I personally think people said, how can Joe Biden win? He hid in his basement. And I said, yes, exactly. Because on the debate stage, I don't think he would have been as strong. But,
He did debate Donald Trump.
Once, and it was actually, it wasn't a very pleasant experience to watch on TV because it wasn't an exchange of ideas. And I don't think that really helped our side at all. So that's kind of where we were. But at the end of the day, more people came out to vote during a pandemic. They thought it was important. And so they came out and expressed their will. But also President Trump, he actually got more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016. So just really the turnout model for everyone was just a lot higher.
And what do you tell Republicans in Georgia who still question the results of the election? Why did Donald Trump lose Georgia?
Well, simply put, when I go out and I talk to community groups, I tell them, here is a simple fact that 28,000 people skipped the presidential race. They didn't vote for anyone, and yet they voted down ballot in other races. And what's really interesting is that the Republican congressmen collectively got about 28,000 more votes than President Trump did. That's why he came up short.
Your chief operating officer,
yes,
Gabriel Sterling, mm-hmm, spent 2 months after the election holding regular press conferences, challenging the misinformation that was flowing from Donald Trump and his allies. An Atlantic Journal Constitution poll conducted in August found that 61% of likely Republican primary voters in Georgia still believe there was widespread fraud in 2020. Are there some people who are not persuadable? Or can more be done to persuade people what you just said you tell community groups?
Well, that's why I do go out and I talk to people, because I also let them know. They said there was 10,000 dead people and there was only four. But there's these, missed out there, or maybe things did happen, you know, in Chicago, in New York, New Jersey, like in the 40s, the 50s,
the 60s,
you know, Tammany Hall and all those other stories. Right. And we've all read about that, you know, that in Chicago, you know, dead people vote twice, things like that. We all, you know, chuckle, but we're concerned. But we actually have very good records and we verify, you know, who the voters are. And we found that there were four people that, you know, voted, assumed the identity of someone that had already passed away.
And in two cases, wasn't it family members?
It was family members. And
who are voting for their deceased family member?
Yeah, and as they actually, two of them were actually Republicans and two of them were the other side. You know, so it was bipartisan, you know, on both sides. They canceled each other out. But they're both brought before the state election board and they're prosecuted for that and they get the penalty. But it's not widespread. And it's just like they said, there were 66,000 underage voters. But see, here in Georgia, you can register to vote when you're 17 and a half. You have to be 18 by election day. We had their day, month, year. The other side, we don't share that information because it's your private information. And so we checked that all out. And so that's what we were doing after the November result. So when people threw out an allegation, they said there's thousands, over 2,000 felons that voted. We went back and we went to, you know, Board of Pardons and Parole and Department of Corrections. We verified and we found less than 74 that were still under felony sentence. It was every single allegation. We went back and we checked. But meanwhile, if you look at my Facebook feed today, people are still talking about State Farm Arena.
Yeah.
And people ask me, what happened to State Farm Arena? Actually, nothing. But you have to understand when I say that, they said, well, you know, no, we did. We looked into it. GBI looked at it. FBI looked at it. And then President Trump, many people don't realize this, but President Trump handpicked Bobby Christine, the U.S. Attorney of the Southern District, to come to Atlanta, become acting U.S. Attorney of the Northern District. He looked into it. And he said, there's nothing there. And he dismissed it over 2 years ago. Finally, the state election board dismissed it. But it's an urban legend. It's a myth. But people, you know, have saw the video that Rudy Giuliani, you know, narrated, and he narrated things. Then the way he did that, he implied that, and he even said, look, there's the illegality or there's ballot stuffing here. But that's not what happened if you look at the whole run of tape.
That anecdote gives me particular pain as somebody who once worked for Rudy Giuliani in an earlier incarnation of his life. Tell me, Mr. Secretary, have you had the personal experience of being able to persuade or change the mind of any individual who first was in total disbelief about the things you've said and then came to see it through the lens of the truth that you've laid out?
I must have, but...
Not that you can think of or well, any specific examples?
I won my primary without a runoff.
And, so what you're saying is
I was reelected. So I think that I've obviously
you persuaded the state of Georgia.
I've convinced enough Georgians, you know, that, okay, I see that. And, you know, and people, the more that the time goes on, they've been able to settle into it. We still have a group of people that are pushing. They want now, you know, basically hand counting of ballots. They want them to be hand marked and they want it a certain way. And that's really what they're going to. They want to do away with, you know, any no excuse absentee voting, which was put in place by Governor Sonny Perdue in 2005. They want to get rid of early voting. They want all 5 million people to show up on one day, that 12-hour period from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And that would be a total revamp of how we run elections in Georgia. 65% of all Georgians now are voting early on the 17 days early voting we have. 30% are voting on election day, and the other 5 or 6% are voting no excuse absentee voting.
Where do you stand on no excuse absentee voting now?
Well, I always felt that you should require, you know, an excuse, but it is what it is. And I just understand that this is what the General Assembly has passed. And I follow the law and I follow the Constitution. And so we've made sure. But we've also have shored it up from the standpoint people said signature match was very subjective. And I said, guess what? That's what I said back in 2018 when I ran for office. And so I said, let's take that off the table. Is there an objective criteria? And lo and behold, Minnesota, Kansas, Nebraska had been using driver's license number, photo ID for years. So I said, let's model ourselves after those states. And so we've taken that off the table and now we have voter ID for absentee voting. And so now we've elevated security. And I think by doing that, we've also increased voters' confidence in that portion of voting.
It seems to me that there has been a sea change in how voter ID is discussed and understood in the popular conversation. There was a time around 2018 and early 2020 where voter ID laws were widely panned and criticized by the left. And it seems as though there has been a change in the thinking and, frankly, the opposition to voter ID laws. To what do you attribute that?
Because we, first of all, have peer-reviewed studies from intellectuals at universities, think tanks, that have showed that it does not hurt turnout. And second of all, you look at Georgia. We had 4 million people 2018, 5 million people in 2020. We had great turnout last year in 2022 in a gubernatorial year. Next year, I expect it to be 5 million plus again. So we're having record turnout. Anyone that wants to vote, we have no excuse absentee voting, 17 days early voting, plenty of opportunities to vote. But when it's photo ID, it's giving people security and confidence in the process. And that is actually, we poll tested it, all demographic groups. 70% of all Democrats believe in photo ID. 56% of, you know, progressives also believe in photo ID. And any demographic groups, it's well off the chart in the high 70%. So, and Republicans are over 90% on that. So obviously my party supports photo ID. But people are saying that the average American, the average Georgian believes in photo ID and it's common sense.
Of the sort of 2%, a very low percentage of people that don't have any sort of IDs, the largest group of those individuals are Americans of color. How do you tackle that continued critique of voter ID?
Well, when the General Assembly did photo ID years ago for in-person voting, they said it's not just your driver's license. Not everyone has one, but 95, 96% of all people do. But we'll accept all these other forms of government ID, plus even a power bill. We just want to know that's really you that lives at this location. So we have about 7 or 8 different forms. But if you have none of that, we will give you free, you know, government-issued ID. And it's free. So we'll do that. And political parties can help facilitate that on both sides of the aisle if you want to be able to register to vote. So we've shown it's very easy to register to vote. And now, you know, people went out and took a look at when we did that, how many people don't have that? And they've said, well, there's less than 200,000 people in the whole state of Georgia that would not qualify for this, but they can get a free photo ID or voter ID all by just asking the state, and we'll make sure they get it.
You talked about paper ballots, switching Georgia to a system where printed ballots were used as one of your first priorities when you came to office and to get that implemented well before the 2020 election. How did the 2020 election reinforce the importance of having a physical paper trail?
Well, it's really important to have a paper ballot. Over 95% of all ballots in America this next election will have a paper ballot. But that means you can audit any race. So you can just pull out the ballots and we just actually were doing some audits really to give voters confidence of our local municipal elections. So I was in Bartow County on Monday. It's about 45 miles north of Atlanta. And they were doing an audit of that race. And I saw the election director yesterday and he said, we're off by one, just one vote. And he said, I said, where was the error? The machines or the people? And he said, it was the people, you know, because whenever you do hand counting, that's where you're going to have the errors. But it just shows you, that's what the results were. The machines were accurate. The system is accurate. And so you can audit any race. In fact, in 2020, many Georgians and many Americans don't realize we had recounted all 5 million paper ballots. And we had three stacks, one for President Trump, one for Vice President Biden, and one for the Libertarian candidate. Three different stacks, added them all up, and President Trump still came up short. But going through that process, we did find about 3 counties that had some errors and that got caught in the audit. In fact, this past week, when they're doing audits here for the municipal elections, Fulton County found 350 ballots that they didn't scan that night. They were going to do it at headquarters. Well, the numbers didn't jive. And when they did that hand recount and hand retally, that's when they found their mistake and they said, oh, there it is. Didn't change the results, but that's the advantage of having a paper ballot.
You really can check for mistakes. Starting in 2020, Georgia allowed election workers to begin to open and scan absentee ballots before Election Day. This process called pre-processing is something that other swing states, especially in the wake of COVID, had implemented. Some had implemented, some had not. And in some cases where they had not, it did create significant delays in counting the ballots. Does getting all of the ballots counted faster contribute to higher confidence in the results of the election?
I believe it does. You know, when things get extended out, you know, that really becomes the breeding ground for conspiracy theories. So we believe that it makes a lot of sense to go ahead and do pre-processing it. So you're doing all the receiving that, verifying the signatures on the envelopes, separating the envelopes from those absentee ballots, then going ahead and running those through the scanners, knowing what your count is. You just don't press the tabulation button. Then as soon as your polls close on election night, you can press tabulation and upload all of your absentee counts, and those are done. So the only thing you haven't done with your absentee ones that have been perhaps received over the mail, like Saturday, Sunday, or people dropped it off Monday or Tuesday at the election headquarters, things like that. But that way, you're going to get much quicker results. And it really, where it really matters is in these states where the margins are so close. So if you're in a state that is just so reliably red, say North Dakota, or so reliably blue, like California, well, you know the delta is so big that you could probably, you know, call that a week before the election. But in these states where we're so close, when it's 10 to 20,000 votes difference between the top vote getters, the more that you can get those results posted quickly, that is good for really the calmness of the electorate.
In Arizona, the legislature has recently passed some measures that will not expedite the counting of the ballots. It'll actually extend the counting of ballots in the case of a very close election, potentially forcing it to miss the deadlines for reporting the electoral delegates and the vote for the electoral count. As you think about these reforms in states, paper ballots, risk-limiting audits, pre-processing, which states, besides Georgia, are doing a good job of making those kind of reforms in order to eliminate uncertainty around the counting of the electorate? I know you're focused on Georgia, but you must look over your shoulder and see what states are also sort of representing a gold standard.
I think I'll stay in my lane. What I will say is I know that people on the other side of the aisle won't care that Heritage has given us top billings for election integrity. But if you look at where we are right now, we're recognized as one of the top tier states for election integrity, which we think is the proper balance of accessibility with security. So in Georgia, we know you're going to have an honest, fair, accurate election. And that's what we really, you know, we've struck that balance. And so we have 17 days of early voting. We have photo ID for all forms of voting. And we put in state law that lines have to be shorter than an hour on election day. So people have a pleasurable experience. Now we have electronic poll pads, which you'll be able to check in and get your voting card, you know, in less than a minute. You imagine what the processing time, we're going to keep those lines even shorter. So all those things that we've added together, and I'm going to stay in my lane because I'm the Secretary of State of Georgia, and other states have to work through their process through their General Assembly. But I do know that the sooner we can post results, accurate results, and then we can audit any race, that's good for the entire, you know, politic of the election process. We want people to feel comfortable. We understand that people aren't going to be happy. I said this back in January 2020. We live in a polarized nation. I know that half the people are going to be happy, the other half won't be. We want them to have 100% confidence in their race. It's kind of like the football game. We don't want you grousing about the call that the ref made. We want you to accept the victory or the loss of, you know, the teams that played that game.
Let me ask you, a few months after President Biden was inaugurated, the Georgia State Legislature passed SB 202, a series of voting reforms. Given all the energy that you had to devote to explaining how fair the elections were in Georgia, why was a voter reform bill necessary?
Well, with SB 202, that's when we added voter ID for absentee voting. We also added that there's a cutoff for your request for the absentee ballot. Before that SB 202, you could request an absentee ballot on the Friday before election day. So you request it, the county may never process it. So it's almost a cruel hoax to a voter. So now we put a cutoff out there so that we can get your request in. The counties then can send you your absentee ballot and you can get it back to the county in time so that you know that your absentee ballot will be counted, things like that. We also made sure that we had on election day, we eliminated out-of-precinct voting because what was happening that when some campaigns were actually encouraging out-of-precinct voting because all that mattered was the top of the ballot. So all that mattered was the people running for governor, for example, you know, in one political party. So one group was using that. Well, we said that's then disenfranchising people for all these other races, but also all of a sudden everyone is flooding the zone. They're showing up to these precincts. So we eliminate that, but up to 5 o'clock. Then if you somehow got off of work late or something like that, then you could vote out of precinct. So that was a very measured response from the General Assembly. But by and large, we want you to vote in your precinct up until that time. But like I said, we also added another day of early voting. We have 17 days, plus that 17th day was the second Saturday. And guess who votes on Saturdays? Working people, blue-collar folks that can't get off during the week. So we actually think we really helped all Georgians. It doesn't matter what political party you're in. It just helps people. And we like helping people be able to exercise their right to vote with photo ID.
Many of these new measures were tested for the first time in the 2022 midterm elections. And results seemed resoundingly positive. Mm-hmm. Record high turnout, accurate results, quick results. And you said that the state's election system, quote, passed every test.
It did.
For the people who looked at SB 202 and called it Jim Crow 2.0, what gives?
Well, we don't expect any apologies because the people that said that, a lot of them are politicians from up in Washington, D.C., or they used to run for office here in Georgia. We get that. But we showed that we have safe, honest, fair, accurate elections, and we kept lines short. And so we really hit the high mark. And so we just continue to put our head down, and we just continue to make sure we have great elections for our fellow Georgians.
You've pushed Congress to reform the National Voter Registration Act to make removing inactive voters from registration lists easier. You've also called for federal elections reform and a shift to voter ID laws to ban ballot harvesting, implement risk-limiting audits in every state. When you push for these federal reforms, what kind of reception do you receive in Congress?
This last Congress has been very active, and it's really great. It's gratifying to see that they've jumped onto many of our ideas, because you have to go back a few years when we had a Republican House, Republican Senate, and a Republican president. We did nothing. And as soon as that dynamic was changing, Nancy Pelosi came into power as Speaker. First thing she did was HR1. 2 years later, she comes back with HR1 on steroids. And that was a federal takeover of elections. It's something that we don't support. And so we need to understand that NVRA of 1993 says that you cannot update your voter rolls 90 days before an election. But I just shared that we have a potential 800,000 people movements a year. That 3 months is 25%. That's 200,000 people that could have moved in that 90-day period. And yet, objectively, if we know that they don't live here anymore, they moved to another state, then why shouldn't we be able to, you know, take them off the voter rolls as long as we're using objective standards? And that's why having bilateral agreements with states so we have concrete information is not subjectivity. Then I think that really helps people understand we're doing this objectively.
Let me ask you about the climate in terms of the fact that to administer our elections, we have historically relied on volunteers to manage their precincts, their polling places. These are people from our communities who step up to help us administer our elections in a free, fair, transparent way. There has been a change in the climate, and there has been a diminishment of volunteerism around helping to administer these elections. Does the Electoral Assistance Commission need more funding in order to secure elections and lure participants, citizens, back to the polling places to help administer our elections? Do we need to pay people to supervise our elections, to administer our elections? What can be done to address the lower participation rates amongst our citizens in our election administration?
I've never been a strong believer in more federal programs. I think they have enough issues on their plate. They can't afford what they tried to do already. But I think that if you go back historically, elections are run at the state level and really at the county level or in other states, the commonwealths. It's really like townships and things like that. But I think it's really the county decision. And I'm really, you know, grateful and gratified for what I'm seeing here at our counties in Georgia. We have 159 counties, but so many of them have newer facilities or updated facilities, remodeled facilities, more secure facilities, and they're investing in their staff and their teams. And I'm really, you know, grateful to see that investment in that. So it's really the counties are sharing that burden, but they are paid. They're not paid a lot. It's like jury duty, but it's just great work. And I think it's really, you know, speaking to people's civic pride. If you want to make, you know, your community better, you want to make your state better or your country better, volunteer to be a poll worker. If you have questions about the whole process, volunteer to be a poll worker, not a poll watcher. I actually do the hard work of showing up there at 6 a.m. and being there till 8:30 or 9 o'clock that night, but being a poll worker. But then you're going to go through that whole process and you're going to have your eyes on it and you're going to be an educated expert and you're going to be able to say to your friends at the grocery store or wherever you meet those folks, oh, no, that's not how that happens. And you can start nipping some of these conspiracy theories in the bud at the grassroots level because you understand the processes that we have in place.
There are real risks for poll workers. You know, some Georgia citizens came under attack by the President of the United States for just showing up and doing their job and supervising the election in the last election place. How do you combat the fact that the climate has really changed around?
I know it has, but you have to understand, I don't think the American people are fearful people. We haven't been. We've been bold. You know, look at this 1776. You know, what we did with this country, you know, that was just audacious, thinking that we were going to get together and separate from the biggest country, the biggest empire that the world had seen right then. And we created this country out of a wilderness. And so we've always been bold, we've always been audacious, and we've always led with our great values that we do have. And that's what you see at the community level. So we just really, you know, people just say, remember who we are. We're Americans, and we can do better, and we can step up when our nation needs us. And right now, we need you to volunteer to be poll workers. And people are doing that here in Georgia, and I'm really grateful for them.
Uncle Sam needs you.
Well, your counties need you because counties run the election, but they're really grateful for you. And as a voter, I'm really excited that, you know, there's actually people there. Imagine if we all showed up to vote and we didn't have poll workers. What would we do? Yes, they're indispensable.
I know you admire Ronald Reagan. This program, Firing Line, was once, obviously, it was hosted by William F. Buckley Jr. for 33 years. And Ronald Reagan was a regular guest on Buckley's program. One of the things that they talked about in one of their interviews was gerrymandering.
What I think it should be done is that there should be a bipartisan commission appointed every 10 years to redraw the districts to reflect what were the changes in population and so forth. Instead, when you leave it to the legislatures, it is a conflict of interest because these are people now that are looking at their own district and so forth. And the result has been the gerrymandering is they will shape a district. Granted, they will funnel as many Republicans as they can, but into as few a districts as possible. Mm-hmm. And then they're assured of the majority. And they've done this. And when I asked for a map at the districts of the Los Angeles area, I got a package that looked like a nest of snakes. They just, every twist and turn that you can find in order to maintain that majority in the legislature.
Both parties do it. Is it time that we consider Ronald Reagan's suggestion?
Well, some states have, and other states use the General Assembly. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I've always been pretty strong that leave it up to General Assemblies because if they don't do it right, because if you go back to 2000 here in Georgia, when the Democrats were trying to maintain control, they started chopping up the districts and they had some really ones that looked like, you know, a nest of snakes, and it got overturned. And also, I think it really got voters so agitated that that's when the state flipped over to the Republicans. And right now, you know, the districts have been looked at by a federal judge. It's an ongoing legal case. So I won't comment further, but I think when you look at some of the states that have these, quote, nonpartisan, you know, commissions for, you know, really redistricting, are they really nonpartisan?
Well,
because
let me tell you,
we all bring our political bias into these things.
I will tell you, in some cases, they're definitely better than leaving it to the legislature. I will tell you, as as an aside, as a resident of New York, a blue Democratic state, Republicans have had a real resurgence in parts of the state and picked up congressional seats because of a bipartisan, nonpartisan commission. To your point, though, you raised Georgia, and I recognize that you don't want to comment on an ongoing case. Mm-hmm. For the viewers, a federal judge last month ruled that the districts drawn by Republicans in Georgia's legislature discriminate against black voters by diluting their political power and must be redrawn before the 2024 election. So there will be a special session, as I understand it, later this month to draw new lines. Is there any way around the political interest of the party in power if the party in power wants to maintain control to have lines that really are what an ordinary, sensible person would call fair?
Well, those go to those issues. Then you have a commission and people bring their political bias to us. There's really never a neutral person. And so that is the issue that we've been dealing with probably since the first constitution that we had. And so we are where we are, and we'll have a special session here in Georgia, and then that'll come before the court. And while it's, because it's before the court right now, I don't weigh in on legal matters like that. I let the General Assembly do their work.
But as a matter of principle, I think what you're saying is accountability ultimately falls at the hands of the people as it is represented through their elected legislators.
I think if something happens so egregious like it did in 2002 here in Georgia or in other states, the voters do respond. People that run for elected office need to understand this really quickly. Voters are smart. They figure it out. They have good, ciphering tools, and they can sniff it out. They can smell, something when it doesn't just smell right.
I have some broader questions for you about the state of the Republican Party. You got into politics, as you write in your book, thinking that you'd be focused on completely different issues, perhaps criminal justice reform, making government more conducive to building businesses. You write about a deeply personal experience you had in the loss of your son to a fentanyl overdose. I don't know that when you got into this, you thought you would end up becoming a poster child for election integrity and for standing up to a bullying president who wanted to overturn an election. How do you reflect on where you've ended up?
I guess the sovereignty of God. He put me here, and I'm here, and I'm here for this period of time, whatever period of time that is, and I'm just here to do my job. It's as simple as that. We've got a law, follow the law, follow the Constitution, respect it, and respect the people that came before us. Really respect the people that founded this nation, people that have fought and died for it. So I think if we had that, and really respect the taxpayers of this country, because they're the ones carrying all the freight. Everyone's paying taxes. They're the ones that are paying for the lights that we got in this building here. They're the ones paying for the heat when we hit winter or the AC in the summer. So respect the taxpayers because they're working hard, and I think they want a break.
In a Veterans Day speech last week, former President Trump declared himself, quote, a very proud election denier. The recently elected Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, as you know, was part of the congressional leadership back in early 2021 that organized the Texas lawsuit that intended to overturn Georgia's election results. You spend your time ensuring the integrity of the elections in your state. How do you handle or grapple with the fact that a significant and important part of the GOP has glommed on to the lies around our elections?
All I can do is just continue to do my job, continue to speak the truth. I think right now it's better to have a calm voice, a quiet voice, than a loud, angry voice. I think that I always lean into just the basic goodness of the American people, my fellow Georgians. I think people are looking for someone that'll do the right thing. I think we're looking for calmer days. I mean this with full respect, but maybe we need to make boring great again. Like, maybe we need an Eisenhower. Because people say, that was kind of boring. Was it really? In the 50s, we had peace and we had prosperity. And then you look at Reagan. He inherited the inflation that he inherited, but he beat that. And then he also started beating back the Soviets. So we had, strength. We felt pride in our nation. And so it's the very best. And I think that's, if you look at what, Hollywood does a great job of capturing what really excites us. And it might be a great Western, like a Silverado, maybe even a True Grit. But also look at Top Gun 1 and 2. You see someone that can, fight for freedom and, they just, the good guys win at the end. And I want America to always be the good guy. And I think most Americans are the good people. And we're going to continue to fight for the good because good always triumphs over evil.
Well, you did win re-election.
Mm-hmm.
And so did Governor Brian Kemp. You beat a Trump-backed primary challenger in Congressman Jody Heiss, who objected to the 2020 presidential results in Georgia, even though he had also won in Georgia and didn't contest those results. What do you take away from you and Governor Kemp's resounding reelection?
I rest my case. Those people are good. And in Georgia, they're wonderful.
Former President Trump has been indicted in Georgia and in federal court over his attempts to overturn the election here in Georgia. You testified before the Fulton County Grand Jury. You were interviewed by federal prosecutors working with Special Counsel Jack Smith. Do you feel that you've done all you can to hold Trump accountable for his actions?
Well, it's not my job to hold him accountable. My job is to say what happened, what didn't happen. I even wrote a book. You know, I got it there and I wrote a letter, 10-page letter to Congress. And I got it on January 6th, part of the congressional record. And the only thing that happened since that letter was written, we found two more dead people, so up to four instead of two. But other than that, nothing has changed in that letter. And so those are the facts. And I think the people, if you read a lot of business books like I have over the years, but Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, is number one, you got to face the brutal truth. And the brutal truth is 28,000 people skipped the presidential race. The brutal truth is Republican congressmen got 28,000 more votes than President Trump. The brutal truth is that's why he came up short. But once you know the brutal truth, then you can kind of grow from that and move forward from that. And so you can really build a campaign that could win based on the truth. And that's going to really be something that's stable. But if you don't face the brutal truth, it's always going to hold you back. But also, I would say to everyone, whatever you run for, no matter what you run for, just remember that the American people are positive and aspirational. They're not into retribution, not into anger, and they're not into vitriol. It may work for a season, but it won't work for more than two seasons. Americans are looking for someone that's sunny, positive, and leading people forward. I rest my case with Ronald Reagan. He just had a sunny disposition. He was just really a nice guy, but he was also very principled, and character was king when he was the president.
After you've just won a re-election campaign, the fact is, as all of us can see from the polls, that President Trump is leading in the presidential primary to be the, is the leading contender to receive the nomination, the Republican nomination. you've suggested optimistically that Republicans can learn from their mistakes, or that we can learn from our mistakes. One of the mistakes in the past is that the majority of Republicans wanted somebody other than Trump in the primary, but divided those votes so that he came away with the plurality. It looks like that might happen again.
Well, if it does, we are going to run an election, and we'll have a presidential primary, and we will tell you who those two winners of that. And then November of 2024, we have a race, and we can say, well, the counties have reported these numbers, and here we've collated them, and here's the victory. And it very well could be President Trump. And if it is, and we're going to announce what the results are, and we're going to make sure we have fair and honest elections in Georgia. And so looking at the polling right now, it looks very positive for him right now, carrying the state of Georgia in 2024. It is what it is.
You mean as the leading candidate?
As the leading,
so
leading candidate.
So if it were in a Trump v. Biden in Georgia.
If you look at that right now, what polling just came out a few weeks ago, yes.
There's an effort underway, as you know, to by several states, it's a legal effort, to prevent Donald Trump from appearing on the ballot based on some language in the 14th Amendment that would supposedly disqualify from him. Mm-hmm. You've written an editorial for the Wall Street Journal about this. Saying, quote, invoking the 14th Amendment is merely the newest way of attempting to short-circuit the ballot box. Make your case.
Well, it already got shot down, that whole idea, in Minnesota and Michigan just a few days ago. So obviously, I was in good legal ground, and I'm an engineer, not a lawyer. But also, I always believe, put the power where it belongs, to the voters. Yeah. Let voters decide. They're smart. They figure these things out.
In the Georgia indictment, many Republicans have dismissed the Fulton case as the Fulton case and the federal probe as a witch hunt. Do you think there is partisanship in the judicial process that is playing out?
I think there is a sense among a lot of people that some people are being held accountable and then other people aren't being held accountable. Specifically, if you look at what has been alleged about the Biden family members, what were they doing with lobbying with other outside, actors, and where has that really gone? And then you look at what happened with President Trump. And I think most people would like to see that everyone is treated and everyone come before, the court of justice and treated equally.
So you're saying that the judicial process that is playing out around Hunter Biden has raised doubts in the judicial process?
I think that's a fair assessment to saying where people are, that it looks like one side is being treated this way and the other side is being treated a different way with kid gloves. And, I think we need to make this side. I think the law should be everyone gets treated the same. And it should matter no matter what office you have and no matter what your station in life is, from making $15 an hour to $150 an hour, whatever you make. But the law should treat everyone the same. I think that's an American principle.
In your estimation, though, do you think that this judicial process is motivated by partisanship?
As it relates to
President Trump's process?
No, I think that they're going through a process and they've already received, people that have pled guilty to, certain things. And so that's there for everyone to come to their own conclusion. But I know that what happened in Georgia has been very clear. And I've talked about all the allegations that were made, and we have the numbers on our side, and time has proven us right.
President Trump also said in his Veterans Day speech, quote, "We pledge to you that we will root out the communists, Marxists, fascists, and the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country, that lie and steal and cheat on elections." I know you don't want to take a public position on the 2024 election, but as an elected Republican, are you comfortable with that rhetoric?
I would prefer speech that's more in line with what I guess I grew up with Ronald Reagan, that was more positive. I think that positive build, negative kills. As an engineer, it takes a lot more energy to build a building than to, go ahead and blow it up. And so, that's what my industry is all about, and engineers, we're looking for solutions to improving, a process or improving people's lives, no matter what that is. It can be from the PC computer, what that's done for improving society and our lives, to so many other things. But that's really, how do we make incremental improvements to improve the way we live, our standard of living, that people have a better life? How do we increase people's individual, prosperity? That's what we really should all be about. Not looking backwards and holding grudge matches. That's Hatfield McCoy stuff. And that doesn't work out for any place that tries it. And, that's why I think we need to move forward. Look at what happened after the World War II. The Nazi Germany started the war, and yet we extended the hand of fellowship to Germany as it was rebuilding as a democratic federal republic. Then look at what happened to Japan. We haven't held any grudges, and they then very shortly, really increased their economy. And now they're two really solid, partners of us economically. We work and we have great, friendships with them. That's the American way. We don't hold grudges. Heck, we fought the British in 1776. Then we fought them again in the War of 1812. And now they're just a good ally. And I think that's the American way. We make friends. We don't make enemies. We try to be friends with everyone. But sometimes diplomatically, and I know geopolitically, you can't. I understand that. And that's why you need someone with the guts of a Reagan that'll stand up to communists, the true communists that are out there, in the other parts of the world, but not making friends with totalitarians and not supporting people that will fight for their own freedom.
Your elections administrator, Gabriel Sterling, in 2020, one of his press conferences, had an emotional moment where he warned about the rhetoric and how it could very well lead to violence. You were declared an enemy of the people. You and your family and your staff received threats, death threats. At one point, you even had to go into hiding, leave your house. Are you ready for 2024?
Best we can be. And we're trying to prepare our counties for any potential threat vector we could have. So we understand cybersecurity. And after the fentanyl-laced letters we just got, you know, last week sent out to election offices, and one was intercepted before it got to Fulton County. Okay, got it. We'll put that on our radar also. You know, so we're looking at
that. That wasn't on your bingo card?
It wasn't on my bingo card.
Fentanyl-laced
letters. You know, to the Postal Service, their credit, I guess they're used to dealing with anthrax and ricin and also fentanyl letters and really tracking that back. And so we knew a letter was coming to Fulton County. They intersected it before it got there. But so you look at what could happen and you try and, you know, game play out any potentiality of what you could have. We just know that it will be a contentious race because we live in a 50-50, very polarized environment right now. We expect record turnout. We expect strong turnout. And we want to make sure people know that we're going to have safe, honest, fair, accurate elections. And so we're going to put safety, you know, in there and do everything we can to help support our counties.
After going through the experience of 2020, where you became public enemy number one, or one of the public enemies of Donald Trump, you wrote in your book that actually coping with personal tragedy, specifically the loss of your son, and having had a full life prior to coming to public service, helped prepare you for the trials and tribulations of public service. How?
Well, I'm doing this. This is really true public service. You know, I'm trying to make things better bit by bit. So when I was on city council, it was a new city. It had been underfunded by years for the county. So how do we widen some of these roads where we have all these traffic jams? How do we put some stoplights in there instead of stop signs? We need some parks, public safety, fire, you know, things like that are just really important. So how do we improve people's daily lives? Because local government is really what you see every day. That's what you live when you see traffic jams, things like that. Then in the state house, how do we improve statewide issues? So I had simple bills that like let you, a business owner, renew your corporation for up to 3 years. What a great idea. It came from a business owner. And so I implemented that as Secretary of State because it had been put into law by the General Assembly when I was a member. So how do you improve, you know, business ownership? How do you remove obstacles, you know, and how do you really remove licensing obstacles, which is part of our domain in Secretary of State's office? Then obviously I thought we needed a verifiable paper ballot. Even I sometimes wondered, what, this electronic voting without a paper ballot? I wonder what happens. I just kind of trusted it. I wasn't one of those people, conspiracy mind, just went on with my life. But I'm going to be Secretary of State. I'm going to give you a verifiable paper ballot. So now you have a verifiable paper ballot. We can audit any race. So that's what we've been doing. And we've had success out in the business world. We sold our business and we've done well. And so my concern, sometimes people go up to Congress, and if they haven't had that financial success, then are they really, can they be independent, or are they fearful that they actually, they think they need this job? No, what you need to do is serve the people and do it to the best of your ability. Think long, think hard about what is the best thing, not just for today, but 20 years down the road, 40 years. You know, the founders really thought long and hard when they started writing the Constitution. They wrote that statute, you know, the Declaration of Independence. When they wrote, you know, the Declaration, it was really an aspirational statement. And then they said, okay, let's fill in the blanks here. What does that Constitution look like? They said, we're going to build it like this where we are today, but we're going to build in flexibility. So if things change, we can modify this Constitution. We're not stuck with the 1785 Constitution or the 1902 Constitution. We can change it as we go. And that's why we have amendments. The foresight of these founders was tremendous. And then it takes visionary leadership. So we've had, as Republicans, we've had some great presidents that have stepped into that moment in time at key hinge points in history to take us to the next level. And I think right now, as Republicans, we're looking for that great leader for the next, you know, time. And if Democrats were honest, so are they, because they know what they got isn't working either.
About the elections of 2020, as you look forward towards them in preparation for them as Secretary of State of Georgia, is there anything that concerns you or worries you that you'll be looking to tackle between now and the elections?
I think 2020 pretty much prepared us for a lot of things. So,
except fentanyl-laced cards, letters.
We're ready. We're in better shape. We have photo ID for absentee voting. Lines have to be shorter than 1 hour. We have the electronic poll pads. We've updated our voter registration database. So we've made a lot of back office improvements just to really streamline what will happen for the voters. They'll see the forward-facing, but the back office has been strengthened and modernized even further. So I feel like we're in good shape, and just continue to prepare. You have to understand, we have a great team. Gabriel Sterling, our state election director, entire election team, and then we've got some great county election directors, and they're working hard in their own organization to further professionalize, you know, their industry, you know, their profession, which is great to see.
As part of a lawsuit brought by activists, a report by security experts identified several vulnerabilities in Georgia's voting machine software. My understanding is that you've dismissed the risks in Georgia's voting machine software as, quote, theoretical and imaginary, and that there's not a plan to update the software prior to the 2024 election. Is that true?
We haven't dismissed it. What we said is that if you look at it from a scalability, it's something that just really isn't probably really a threat to the level that they're trying to say. Because really what their end game is they want hand-counted, hand-marked paper ballots. That's what that all came from. Another group of experts looked at it, and the MITRE report, you know, looked at all those allegations that they made and dismissed it down. And they said there's two potential vulnerabilities, and we're addressing those. But also, as it relates to updating, you know, the software, it's not just an update like it is on your iPhone. It's actually a full taking the system down that we have and implementing and installing a new system for all 30,000 plus voting machines we have in the entire state of Georgia. And looking at the timeline we have, we did not have an approved system that was EAC certified and certified by us until September of 2023. And when you look at the window of what we have, so that's why we piloted that in a few counties for the municipal elections. And so as soon as we finish up the 2024 cycle, we'll be able to do full implementation. But until we had the full EAC certified and then certified by our cybersecurity experts and our software experts, then we really couldn't implement that. And that didn't happen until September.
So you're confident the system as is?
Yes.
We'll do the job.
Yeah.
You wrote in your book, quote, "We need the people who hold public office to continually strive for the noble causes in life with noble behavior." Mm-hmm. As you look towards the Republican field today, who do you think is doing that?
I'll let them each speak for themselves and then let the voters decide which one represents those values.
What are you most looking forward to into the 2024 election cycle?
I know we'll have a fair, honest, and accurate election, and that there'll be a winner and there'll be a loser. And I hope that the winner, when they win with grace. Likewise, the loser does the same.
From your lips to God's ears. Secretary Brad Raffensperger, thank you for joining me on Firing Line.
Thank you.